I'll take it in, but don't look down.
'Cause I'm on top of the world, hey. I'm on top.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome to JJ's Football Fix, the A-League Hour. My name is Jordan Gifkins, and alongside me is the very handsome and my buddy, Jake White. Hello.
Hi, mate. How are you?
Fucking fantastic, mate. Episode 13 of the A-League Hour. We're 13 weeks into our, A-League Hour history. Don't know if that makes any sense, Jake. What am I talking about? Know. I have no idea. I am absolutely on hot case at the moment. Lots to talk about today, Jake, as per usual. I think I say that every single episode. There's lots to talk about because realistically, there is lots to talk about, isn't there? We have the last round to talk about of the A-League. We had the preview, of course, coming up. We've got our Player of the Season award to have a look over. And we're going to talk about some news. We've got the under-23s were announced, a few transfers here and there, a few speculation, rumours, stuff like that, and re-signings, you know how it is in the A-League. Just the usual, Jake, isn't it? yeah, Jake, how have you been today on this glorious Tuesday afternoon in Melbourne, Australia?
Literally woke up like 2 hours ago.
Yeah, so
did I. Well, not even 2 hours ago, probably about an hour and a half ago. Then I've had some pasta to eat. I've downloaded the Don Bradman Cricket 17 patch number 3.
Plug.
And I'm roaring to go.
I can say I've done very minimal today. I've had a bowl of Weet-Bix, had a coffee, had a shower, and I am ready to go. I'm still going to download the patch. Hope I can sneak in about an hour of gameplay before training. But we'll see what happens, you know. We'll see what happens. It's all about the experience in life, isn't it?
You're talking about
it. No idea. Jay, we're gonna kick on here to the review, as we do at the start of every episode of the A-League Hour and everything EPL, if you listen to that as well. Melbourne City, they hosted Central Coast Mariners in this big tussle of the big boys in the A-League. Melbourne City took the lead in the third minute through a Tim Cahill header, I believe it was, if I'm not mistaken. Honestly, what else? Actually, no, this one wasn't the header. This one was a cutback. Yeah, Luke Bratton's crossed it in. Tim Cahill's put it into the bottom corner. It might have been a deflection. I'm not too sure. But the lead didn't last long. Roy O'Donovan, who was mounted in controversy this game, brought things level in the ninth minute. I'm not even sure how the goal was scored, if I'm honest, Jake. I cannot remember. I think it was a cutback, to be honest.
Probably.
Yeah. Well, Connor Payne assisted it, so I'm going to assume that Connor Payne ran down the left-hand wing and passed it to Roy O'Donovan and scored. But he wasn't on the pitch for long, Jake, as a 23rd-minute incident between him and Jakobsen of Melbourne City amounted in O'Donovan getting himself a red card. Now, this one, I say it's amounted in controversy because not only was the decision a bit harsh, but there was a review on this red card, and people were thinking it was going to be overturned because I don't think it was exactly the same, but Berisha was compared to it, the incident where his was overturned last week. But he got sent off. His decision did not get overturned, much to the delight of every Central Coast supporter. probably not. And he was off the pitch. Now, I don't know. The incident to me wasn't a red card, Jake. I don't know what you think of the incident, but it looks like it could be a yellow card. It's definitely a foul. He did raise his arm, but it was to protect him in the drop zone of the ball, so I'm not too sure if it was really warranting a red card, yeah.
I don't think it was. It shouldn't have been a red card, and it completely turned the game on its head as well, which is frustrating for a neutral supporter. and a supporter of Victory who wants Melbourne City to lose as many games as possible. Because it was at a stage where, like, I think City dominated the game. City well and truly deserved the 3 points, and they should have won by a lot more than one goal. But this decision to send O'Donovan off turned the game completely on its head, because, like, they'd scored, like, 15 minutes prior to it, and they had a little bit of momentum. They just weren't cracking down City's defence, and they were looking all right, and Roy Donovan was getting good space positions, and Connor Payne was getting a lot of space as well. And then I literally don't remember a Central Coast Mariners attack after going down to 10 men, which it just turned the whole game on its head. And City dominated, and I'm not taking anything away from City, but I don't know how there's no right for how there's no way that O'Donovan has been in the same situation as Berisha, where he can get his red card rescinded, because I wouldn't say it was the exact same, because this one there was at least a little bit of contact, but I don't think it's anywhere near a red card. And I don't know how the FFA have decided that Berisha's gets overturned but O'Donovan's doesn't, because they're very, very similar. Both shouldn't have been red cards. So I don't know how they've decided on that, because it just shows the consistency that the FFA have towards these sort of decisions. Like, I don't know, like, what more to say. It really pisses me off, because I want Central Coast to do well, and I want Central Coast to challenge teams like City. And then I don't even get sent off 23 minutes into a game for doing nothing worth a red card, and the game's basically dead. Like, the stats show what I'm saying, too. City had 63% possession, 26 shots to 2. Like, even before, I reckon at the 23-minute mark, it would have been almost 50-50 in possession and probably about 4 or 5 shots to 2 or something like that. And it literally just turned the whole game on its head. And Central Coast, I rate Central Coast. I think they're a good team. I know they're last and everything, but I think they're a lot better than what their league table position does show. But it just, I don't think they're a team that would ever cope well with going down a man. Like, not many teams do cope well with going down a man, but, like, Victory obviously proved against Brisbane that you can cope, but I don't think Central Coast are a team that could go anywhere near coping, because they've already got young, inexperienced players in their team, and O'Donovan's one of the most experienced players in their team, and when he gets sent off, there's not much that they're going to be able to do attacking-wise. So, yeah, City deserve 3 points, but it just ruins the game when a stupid decision like that is being made, and I don't remember the last time we went through a round without there being one decision that hasn't been talked about. Like, every single round this season, I think there's been a talking point on a referee decision. And it's not good enough. I understand that maybe in the Premier League, potentially every second week or something like that, because there's 10 games, but there's 5 games a week. How hard is it to go 5 games without making a controversial fucking decision?
Yeah. And I think the interesting thing with the call was the referee, I'm not sure who it was, I think it was Evans, if I'm not mistaken. He originally, I think, was either just going to blow a foul or give a yellow card, but he got called over by his linesman, and they had a talk, and then he decided to give the red card after his linesman's contribution to the decision. So I'm not sure.
It was the exact same as the Berisha one, too. The linesman was the one that made the call, and Berisha decision too. Like, why can't linesmen just do their fucking job and put the flag out when the ball goes out, or put the flag out when a player's offside?
Yeah, I think,
look, there's a reason why they're fucking linesmen and not actual referees.
Shots. Anyway, Cahill in the 39th minute gave City the lead, and they held on. They held on all game. I wouldn't say held on. They dominated the entire game, especially after the red card. Paul Izzo was fantastic in this game. I think it wasn't for him, it would have been about 5, 6, possibly even 7. 26 shots to 2 pretty much says it all, and it was only a 2-1 win. Very FIFA-esque. But yeah, massive, massive result for City. They needed to bounce back. They've not been in the best form. It's only Central Coast. Take nothing away from them. They've been not bad this season, despite their position on the table, but That was a game they were expecting to win, and for them to get that win is good for them, Jake. Good for them. We'll move on to Friday night. Sydney FC hosted Adelaide FC, who have been somewhat of a bogey team for Sydney in recent times, especially in Sydney. Adelaide tend to get up and nick a point, sometimes even three over the years. It wasn't the case in this affair, though. Alex Brosk, I think it might have been his return from suspension, scored in the 58th minute before Milos Ninkovic scored 2 minutes later to make it 2-0 and keep that unbeaten run intact for Sydney as they strive to become the first A-League team to become the Invincibles, Jake. 13 shots to 5, a bit more possession for Sydney. It was a game Sydney were the better team. Adelaide had patches and opportunities here and there. They started the game really well, Adelaide, but they couldn't capitalise on any of their early dominance. And Sydney doing what they've done all season, just grinded out a result and got another win to extend their lead at the top of the table. Expand their point tally, haha. But yeah, Jake, I think it was just another case of Sydney being the better side and duly getting that win on the board.
Yeah, they were the better team, realistically. I'm not going to take that away from them. But at the same time, I don't think they really deserve the win as such. Like, they, in a way, like, off the gameplay and stuff, they're the better team and realistically they did deserve the win. But the two goals they scored, I don't know what Adelaide had done. Brosk is a great player and it was a good goal, the first goal, but in my opinion, Galekovic should be saving it and the defenders should be doing much better. And then the second one, the ball was bouncing around for like a minute in the 18-yard box and there's not one Adelaide player that made an attempt to go anywhere near clearing it. So realistically, like the better team deserved 3 points in a way, but at the same time, both their goals shouldn't have happened, in my opinion. But that's something that Adelaide need to work on, I guess, and that proves why they're equal last right now, because there was shambolic defending for the two goals, and that just proves how good Sydney realistically are. They didn't play the most fantastic game ever, but they had a four-minute period where they absolutely dominated. And they scored two goals and got the win, so fair play to them. But I genuinely think Sydney are just going through a little bit of a patch right now where they're not really playing. Like, they're still grinding out results, but they're not playing terrific football. And it will catch up with them, I think. But at the same time, right now, they're still grinding out the results, and that's the most important thing for them. This game, I watched it, and they didn't play well. But, like I said, they grinded out the results, and the result and Adelaide weren't good at all. They had a few good chances early. Sirio should have scored a tap-in, but he didn't, for some reason, didn't run to the back post in the first half, and Sydney got the 3 points shortened. So I don't know why, or what Adelaide were doing, because Adelaide were known last season for being one of the best teams defensively. They weren't conceding many goals at all last season. And I don't know what's got, like, I know they've lost players, and I know they've got a complete, well, not a completely different, but they've got a very different squad to what they had last season. But at the same time, they've still got similar players in the defence, apart from Taylor Regan, who's stealing a living playing in the A-League. And they've still got Galekovic, who I still rate as one of the best keepers in the league. So I don't know what they're doing for the two.
Do you?
So, yeah, he's proved, well, not right now. Not right now. I think he's proven over the last few seasons that he is one of the best. But not right now. This season, it's been his worst season by an absolute mile.
Yeah.
But last season, he was a huge part in them winning the title. So I'll give that to him. And he's been a consistent number four. But this season's been his worst season by an absolute mile. There's probably a good 5 to 6 keepers that are probably better than him in the league right now. Probably nine, to be honest. But yeah, I don't know what to say too much on this game, because in my opinion, Sydney weren't that good at all. And it's easy for me to say it when Victory have lost their last two games in a row, but I feel like if they turn up like that on Thursday against Victory, Victory will put 5 past them. So they need to turn up on Thursday, Sydney, or else they will cop a loss. But at the same time, they're just flying alone, and I'm not going to take that away from them.
I wanted to just note on the crowd figure, 11,225 people attended the game against Adelaide. I know you were publicly came out and said that I saw you have a dig at their attendance, which is fair enough. I mean, for a team averaging a touch over 18,000 people per home game, you know, to only get 11,225 people there is pretty dismal. That's their lowest of the season. Which, funnily enough, is more than the highest Wellington Phoenix ever had to a home game, which is all right. but yeah, I think I don't know if it was the weather was bad or what, but Sydney FC versus Adelaide, albeit Adelaide were in a dismal position, it's historically been like a pretty decent game, and they've always been good affairs. Adelaide have always shown they've been up for a tussle against Sydney, especially away. So I'm not sure what really drove the support away, but it was pretty average.
And I'll be consistent with that too, because I want fans to turn up all the time. And I'll be consistent with that on Thursday too, because I feel like anything under 35,000 on Australia Day is going to be shambolic, and I'll definitely have a dick of victory fans and all that stuff who don't turn up on Thursday. But I think it's stupid that they're unbeaten. They're flying at the top of the table. It wasn't fantastic conditions. Like, if there was a little bit of rain an hour or so prior to the game, but during the game, the conditions were fine. What more is there? What more could Sydney FC do to draw, apart from, like, obviously publicity and stuff? What more could they do as a performance on the pitch to draw people to games? They got 40,000 the week before. I know it was Derby, but still, what, like, 10 to 15,000 of that was Western Sydney fans, maybe 10,000 of that Western Sydney fans, so probably about 25 to 30,000 of that were Sydney FC fans. So where was the 15 or so thousand that didn't show up to Sydney FC fans that didn't show up on Friday? Where were they? It doesn't make sense. It's not like they got absolutely pumped in the derby. I don't think they should have won the derby. They deserved a draw, but like, it's not like it was a horrible performance. And they're unbeaten, top of the league, and they're drawing 11,000 people to the games. And I don't want to toot victory's horn and stuff like that, but 4 to 5 years ago, when Victory won 3 home games all season, they were still averaging 15,000 for the whole season. And their lowest crowd number was 10,000 for the whole season, and they won 3 home games all season. And, like, I know it's well documented, Victory have the most consistent home attendance in the leagues and all that stuff, but and as much as I hate Sydney, and the same goes for City, I still want to see sold-out stadiums. I still want, like, I know they're not going to sell out stadiums, but I'd love to see just one game, like, next week or something, Sydney, whoever they're playing, at home, they somehow get, like, 30,000 rock up to the game. I would love to see that, because it creates a better atmosphere, creates better viewing for the neutral and watching on TV and stuff like that. It creates more publicity for the league, and I'd love to see the same for City. I'd love to see City get, like, over 15,000 against a team that is a Victory.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be consistent with that, because I'll be pissed off if there's not 35,000 on Australia Day. And I was pissed off that there's nothing against Perth. Fair play to Perth that they got a fair few fans to the game on Saturday. But since when was the last time that Perth was the highest attendance for the round, when Western Sydney and Sydney FC had home games?
Western Sydney, you've got, it's a little bit different because they were in a different stadium. Yeah. That could only hold so many people. In saying that, though, they're
still in the heartland of Western Sydney.
Yeah, in saying that as well, though, that was their lowest attendance for the season. That was 9,477 people attended the game. So that was their first time they've gone under 5 figures. So I don't know. We had two record lows for the season in Sydney FC and Western Sydney, both pulling their smallest home attendances for the season. So two teams that averaged the second and third most average home attendances in the league this season had their two lowest. So I don't know. It's the not week a good after episode the derby. For the league. No. But I guess you got to have your lows if you want to get your highs. So there's got to be a lower sometimes. I mean, it happens in every sport, realistically. Like, you don't really get the publicity on, like, the EPL has the same thing. A lot of teams that are underperforming don't sell out their stadiums. So, I mean, EPL being such a massive league as well. It's, whatever, we're not going to go in depth into the average in stadiums and stuff like that. we'll just move on to the next game here, Jake, which is when my app loads here. Wellington Phoenix hosted Brisbane Roar. This game was actually very entertaining because there was a lot of long shots in this game. I was watching the highlights after it, and every highlight was Dimi Petratos lining one up from about 30 yards or Bonavazzi almost scoring one of the best goals I've ever seen. But yeah, even game. I can't really say either team really deserved the winner. And from a game that produced a lot of quality in regards to like how far out the shots were and the, you know, all the technique and stuff involved with all their shots. It's a shame that the goal was the way it was because that was some of the worst defending I've seen from anyone this season. And Durante, if I were you, I would hide. But it was a 1-0 win. Hey?
He's never been good.
No, he hasn't. But it was a 1-0 win for Brisbane Roar. Jamie McLaren scoring in the 87th minute, set up by Borrello, in front of another dismal crowd of 6,449 people. Funnily enough, is not the worst home crowd for Wellington this season. Look, Brisbane, they, in my opinion, probably should have won this game. I think Glenn Moss was outstanding. He made, I don't know, maybe two or three top like saves. But at the end of the day, if you keep a clean sheet, you're not going to lose the game. And Durante, doing what he did, copped Wellington Phoenix their clean sheet. Brisbane Roar win 1-0. And Wellington Phoenix, slight rise of form, goes a bit wonky, doesn't it?
Well, I don't know what Durante was thinking for the goal. Like, it's shambolic defending. Like you said, no one really deserved to win this match. It was a really weirdly entertaining game to watch, but I don't think anyone really deserved to win it. But you win some, you lose some, Jordan. But like you said, there's a lot of long shots. Fucking heaps. And I think that was because it was windy, so they were trying to, like, get the wind to sort of just float it into the top corner. Rather than actually aiming for anything, they were just fucking having a ping and hoping for the best. Which, it's good to watch sometimes, but at the same time, when it was so repetitive, you're just like, hey, he's going to take a long shot here. And he did. Petridos put, and I reckon Petridos is probably the first player in a while to kick the ball into the stands at Westpac Stadium from taking a shot, so fair play to him. Because the stands are a fair way away from the pitch there, so I don't know how he's managed that. But
he's a good player, but
Player. He's good. He's been very good when he's got given the chance this season. Be fair to him, he had a very slow start to the season, but over the last month or so, when Brisbane has sort of hit a sort of rough patch, he's really stepped up. So it's fair play to him. They got the 3 points in the end of the day. It's a big 3 points for Brisbane too, because they want to try and keep pressure, keep as much pressure as possible on second place. Although they are 8 points away from second place, it's still not over, because if Victory lose this week and Brisbane win, then that's 5 points. So they're still well in it, and they still want that one final too. If they hadn't lost this, then they'd be equal fifth with Perth. So it's a big win for them, very important win. It's disappointing for Wellington as they were starting to get a bit of momentum, because if Wellington had a won, then actually, just looking at it, if Wellington had a won, then Brisbane, Perth and Wellington would have all been tied on 21 points. So that would have been interesting, but alas, that did not happen. Brisbane got the 3 points, and fair play to them, Jordan.
Fair play to them indeed, Jake. Fair play to them indeed. the next game we'll cover here, Perth Glory at home to Melbourne Victory. Interesting affair here. Brisha opened the scoring for Victory in the 58th minute from the penalty spot. Prior to that, hadn't missed a penalty, so not good. Before Marinkovic scored a free kick, probably shouldn't have gone in realistically in the 77th minute. Adam Taggart then scored his fourth goal in four games. I ideally has scored all four goals in one game each. Sort of, I don't know, shut up. Taggart, good player. Perth Glory win 2-1. And they have, I think, moved into the top six or consolidated their spot in the top six now.
Yeah.
So that's good for them. Not good for Victory, who are now two losses in a row. Tough, though, travelling from New Zealand and then going to Perth. It's never easy. Musket's quick to jump on the fact that there's no excuses. I think you've praised him for that.
Yeah.
But it's never, regardless of what Musket says and what the players will say, it's never easy to go from New Zealand and then travel to Perth. Yeah, it's called the long distance derby for a reason, and Victory has had a shit one in both of those games. But in saying that, like, Perth are pretty decent. Without taking anything away from them, they toiled hard. They got their rewards at the end of the game, and even though the first one shouldn't have happened, their second one was a pretty well worked goal. Risen did very well to get past. Not sure who it was down the right hand side. It might have been Georgievsky. But yeah, it was an interesting game to say the least. Jake, I'm sure you'll have a little bit to say about this one.
Well, it was a very frustrating game because, in my opinion, we should have been up 4-0. Because we should have scored both penalties. Rojas missed the one-on-one, and then Rojas had a goal disallowed, which was wrongly disallowed. So it was a bit frustrating because, really, all those go in the back of the net. And if the one that was disallowed isn't disallowed, then you're up 4-0 in Perth and happy days. But that wasn't how it worked out for us. Which is frustrating, and it made it more frustrating that I feel like Perth should have got a red card too. But at the same time, there's not much you can do about that. You have to take what you get given to you, Jordan, and we didn't. And in all fairness, ever since we went 1-0 up, Perth absolutely dominated the game. Diego Castro took control of the game and just proved how good he really is. I don't want to sound biased, but the free kick should have never happened as well. In my opinion, it's never a foul. And Lawrence Thomas should be doing better setting up his wall, because that's twice in three games now where he set up his wall and the ball has gone to the side of the wall and has gone in the back of the net. Like, you can't really do much about the Chardos one, but in my opinion, you can for this one. Even Musket came out and said the way the wall was set up was shambolic, so he's not afraid to have a dig at Lawrence Thomas, who has been getting many praises this season, but he's had a few interesting games. Like, he had a good game against Wellington, and he had a good game in this game too in the way of making saves and stuff, but even the game against Newcastle where he conceded two, he's a great keeper in my opinion. I think he's the best keeper in the league, but just some of the decisions he makes, it's just frustrating sometimes for the goalkeeper, which he'll learn with. He's still young, and the more experience he gets, he'll get better and make better decisions. Hopefully he doesn't make a stupid decision this week, because probably Victory's biggest game since the grand final. So Victory really have to turn it around too, because they didn't play well in this game at all. As much as I say, and I stand by it, we should have been up 4-0. At the same time, Perth were fantastic in the last half an hour, and as soon as Victory scored their goal, it just looked like Victory just tried to put everyone behind the ball and hold on for the 1-0 win, which whenever we try to do that, it just turns to shambles. So, fair play to Perth. Diego Castro is a phenomenal footballer, and Marinkovic is also a very good footballer. And it's good that, as much as it was against Victory, it was good to see Taggart get on the score sheet, and good to see Taggart start to hit the back of the net on a consistent basis as well. So I'm not taking away from
very exciting for Australian football, Taggart.
Yeah. So I'm not taking anything away from Perth. They were the better team overall, I think. Although Victory should have won, I think Perth were the better team. So fair play to them. They're starting to really show some consistency too. They're, like you said, consolidated their spot in the top six. Not really consolidated in a way, because they are 3 points into the top six, but their goal difference isn't terrific. So if Western Sydney get a big win this week and Perth lose, then could end up interesting. So they're still going to find their consistency, because if they keep winning or keep getting results, then they should be in the finals, and they've got the team to be in the finals. So well done to them.
Yeah, I mean, like we've said plenty of times over the past 13 weeks, Perth Glory have been underperforming this season. We had a look at their squad pre-season. We both agreed that it was probably one of the best squads in the league, and they should be really up there in that sort of finals position, and or not so close to missing out. You know what I mean? Like, it's pretty odd for the most part of the season that they haven't been in that top six. But now that they're there and their form is really lifted, you can see them kicking on into potentially a top four position, depending on Brisbane and even Melbourne City have only just, well, I wouldn't say scraped doing against Newcastle, or Central Coast, sorry. Realistically, they dominated, but it was only 2-1. But if their form continues to sort of, you know, dimmer a little bit and Perth continue their run, they could even move into top three. So we'll see what happens with Perth. A home final for them would be a really good result, but I guess there's still a bit of time for now and then. And we'll see what happens, Jake. But we'll move on to the next game. And the final game of the round, Western Sydney hosted Newcastle Jets. And this is a big sigh of relief match for Lachlan Scott, the striker, 19-year-old from Western Sydney. Finally scored his first goal in the A-League. He'd scored at this ground, interestingly, in the FFA Cup. He'd never scored for Western Sydney's senior team except for an FFA Cup match against Adelaide, in which he scored two at this venue. So the return to this venue has meant he's scored, which is nice to see. He scored in the 44th minute, a very, very nice goal from the youngster, before Joshua Sotirio then scored a deflected strike in the 68th minute, Jake, to give him a 2-0 win against Newcastle, who didn't offer too much this game. They're a little bit off, to be honest, let's be honest. West Sydney full deserved their win. I think Nico Martinez was fantastic. And very good support from the likes of Mitch Nichols and those around him. Terry Antonis still hasn't made his debut for Western Sydney, interestingly. But I'm sure that will not be too long. Might even be this week. Sanslab made his return to the side and came on in the 69th minute for Lachlan Scott. So, a good day around for Western Sydney, whose home form has been bad, and a very much needed victory to keep them in the race for that top six position, Jake.
Yeah, well, I'd assume that Antonis will be playing this week, because he was on the bench against that on the weekend, so he's just a new sub, but I think he's a good enough player to crack into the Western Sydney starting 11. But yeah, I think it's a very big win for Western Sydney, because then the furthest thing out of a top six spot, because they're equal sixth right now. They haven't had a fantastic season. They've won 3 games of their first 16, but that's how the A-League works. They're still equal with sixth place, which is a final spot. And if they start clicking, which I think they are, they're starting to play some really good football. If they keep on going, they could be a little bit of a danger team to play against. I don't think a Melbourne City or a Brisbane Roar would be too keen to have Western Sydney travelling to them in the first week of the finals. So could be an interesting end to the season. Like, the end to the season is going to be very jam-packed, I think, because you've got City and Roar who are going to fight it out for third spot. Mm-hmm. You've got Victory in Sydney, a Victory win this week. They're still going to fight it out for first spot. And then you've got a clusterfuck of teams of Perth, Wellington, Western Sydney and Newcastle. They're going to fight it out for the top six. So it's going to be a very good finish this season. Still 11 weeks left, so anything can happen. Fair play to Western Sydney. They desperately needed this win, and they got it. They weren't fantastic, in my opinion, but at the same time, they're playing a lot better right now than what they were this time a month or two ago. So they're starting to sort of click, and with Nico Martinez, the way he's playing, I think he'd easily slide into most A-League teams. So I think that's proof of how good the recruitment staff can be at Western Sydney when they've picked up players like Nico Martinez, and in the past they've picked up players like Shinji Ono and stuff like that. So I think Western Sydney should be proud of that. But I still stand by the fact that I think they need to change their manager, because I think it's getting a bit too predictable with how they are playing at the same time. Because they're making this, they've made the, apart from this week actually, I got a mate on Twitter who supports Western Sydney, and they made the same substitutions 5 weeks in a row.
And this league was only different because of Sandflat, probably.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a bit repetitive, I think, for Western Sydney. Nothing against Tony Popovich in a way. I think Tony Popovich can be a good manager in the future and stuff, and could go to like Asia or something like that and crack it as a good manager. But I feel like Western Sydney just need a bit of a breath of fresh air. But I can't see them sacking Tony Popovich before the end of the season anyway.
Nah, if they did it, they'd do it next season, you'd think. If they miss out finals, I think he's 100% gone, though. That's all we've got in the review. We'll have a look at the table quickly. Sydney FC currently sit on 40 points in first position. They're safe from relegation now with that 40-point mark. Or is it 30 points? I don't know. In which case, they're safe as well as Victory, who sits second on 32 points. City in third on 26 points. Brisbane Roar in fourth on 24 points. Perth Glory fifth. As we said, they sort of consolidated their position in the top six on 21 points. Wellington Phoenix and Western Sydney both sit on 18 points. A tight tussle there. Newcastle just slightly further out, 17 points in eighth. Adelaide, they are now ninth, or they have been ninth. They're on 10 points. Central Coast on the same amount of points in last position. Last on goal difference, Jake. Sad to see Central Coast at the bottom with their performances. Haven't been bad. The top scorers in the league, Bessart Berisha, has 13 goals. Looks like he's running away with that a little bit. Fornaroli has 11. I was going to say Mohas or some shit, I don't know. Marco Rojas has 10. Alex Brosk has 9. In the assists chart, Ninkovic leads all comers with 8. Marco Rojas has 7. Apparently, Chris Harold, Bruce Kamau, and James Troisi all have 6 assists to their name. Jake, I think it's time for the JJ's Football Fix Player of the Season. Oi, 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 oi.
Really?
I have no idea.
Some introduction.
No idea what that is, if I'm honest.
I'm
learning as I go. Just exactly what it takes to introduce said introduction. No idea. Jake, who are you giving your one vote to this week?
I'm giving my one vote this week to Paul Izzo. Just on the basis that if it wasn't for him, Central Coast could have quite easily lost by a good 6 or 7 goals. I know it's not exactly expected of many people to give a player of the season vote to a team that's sitting last on the table and that lost this week, but Paul Izzo was exceptional and made some fantastic saves. And like I said, if it wasn't for him, they would have got absolutely embarrassed, and that's the last thing that Central Coast need right now. So, yeah, I'm going to give you my one vote, Jordan.
I'm going left field with my one vote. Well, not really, actually. I'm giving it to Cahill. He scored 2. I mean, I don't even think he's got a vote this season, if I'm honest.
Probably the last person to be giving him a vote.
He scored 2. Says it all, really. They won 2-1. And he's scored both. So he's won the game pretty much for Melbourne City, essentially speaking. Decent goals. The header wasn't bad, but the positioning and the technique on his first one was pretty decent. And well set up by Luke Bratton, who's very unlucky not to get a vote from me this week. Jake, who are you giving your two votes to?
My two votes is going to the second best player in the A-League, Jordan Milos Ninkovic. A little diggity. Yeah, he was exceptional again for Sydney FC. pretty sure, I'm not 100% sure, but I think he may have assisted their first goal, but he did score the second as well, and probably should have scored a few others, which I guess is a little bit of a digging into because his finishing wasn't fantastic, but at the same time, he's been exceptional this season and was very good again against a very lacklustre Adelaide team, Jordan.
That he was, Jake. I'm going to be giving my two votes this week to Paul, the Spider-Man Izzo. He, like you said, fantastic game on the weekend against City. It was on Thursday, so it wasn't on the weekend. Yeah, I think he made 7 saves, I think was the number, which is an impressive feat for a goalkeeper. Faced 26 shots against him. He did everything he could, realistically, to, you know, stop City. At the end of the day, it wasn't enough, but like you said, without him, it probably could have been 5, 6, even 7. So I think it's a very good effort from him, who's really stamping his credentials as one of the best Australian keepers this season, Jake. So it's good to see from Big Paulie, the Spider-Man Izzo. Jake, player of the round, who is it?
Player of the round is... I don't want to predict it because I got it wrong last week because I thought you were going to give it to Donicky last week, but you didn't. I am going to give my player of the week to Diego Castro, and I reckon you're probably going to be similar, but I don't know.
Could not be further off, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah.
Fuck. Oh, I reckon Diego Castro single-handedly won Perth the game. He's in the top 5 players in the league right now, in my opinion. He was exceptional last season for me too, and beating a team like Victory is no easy feat, and when you basically do it off your own back, I think you deserve 3 points for player of the season, Jordan.
Jake, you're going to lose your shit against who I'm giving my 3 votes to, because this is...
He wasn't a conviction of fucking punch in the face.
No, this person has not received a single vote this season.
Really? Wait, can I have a guess?
You can.
Who's he play for?
Western Sydney.
Western Sydney, Mitch Nichols?
Yeah, you only get one guess, and that's not it. It's very left field, and I'm a huge admirer of players who do the little things exceptionally well. My 3 votes this week are going to Kieran Backus of Western Sydney.
That's fair enough, actually. That's very good.
I think he had the most touches of any player this round, if I'm not mistaken. He's in the middle of the park. He pretty much just controlled proceedings against Newcastle. He set up Lachlan Scott's goal with a fantastic pass right where he wanted it. But he was just everywhere in the middle of the park, running around, just distributing the ball to perfection. I thought he was absolutely fantastic and one of the best individual centre midfield performances I've seen this season of anybody. So I honestly could not keep my eyes off him for the entire game. I thought he was fantastic. And I haven't watched that much Western Sydney this season, but it was refreshing to see a centre midfielder that played a lot like Ross Barkley, Jake, as a centre mid, which is nice to see.
No, that's fair enough. Actually, I didn't really think of Backus, really, but he was very good. So I'll give you that, Jordan, because I did not expect that in fucking slice.
Mitch Nichols. As soon as I said Western Sydney, I thought you would have said Martinez or Lachlan Scott or something like that.
No, because I remember giving Martinez votes at the start of the season.
Hey?
I think I've given Martinez votes at the start of the season at some stage.
Yeah.
And you said that the guy hasn't got votes.
Yeah, fair enough. I think Nichols has votes as well, but you might have won.
Yeah, probably.
No, he doesn't. Anyway, that's player of the season done. We'll quickly have a look at the leaderboard at the moment. Rojas still leads all comers on 19 votes, comfortably ahead of Milos Ninkovic in second on 13 votes. Further back, Luke De Villa has 9 in third place after his little spell. He hasn't done too much since. Berisha has 8. Theo has 8. Choisi has 8. And there's a lot of people who have a little bit less than that. There's literally a lot of players that we've given votes to. I think there's more than 20 players in the league we've given votes to this season, which is very good. I mean, there's a lot of different players around the league.
It's interesting to see who wins it, Jordan.
Mm.
You think Rojas probably will, but at the same time, there's a lot of players really.
Fornaroli's only had 4 votes.
It's because he's been. I like having digs at City players, but I think he's been shit. I think he's. Like, you scored a lot of goals in all fairness, but at the same time, like, I think City's midfield has won them more games than what. Like, I know Fornaroli is finishing off chances and Cahill is too, but I feel like the midfield of, like, Bratton and Kilkenny and Caceres, whoever the fucking other guy is, what's his name?
Which one?
Melbourne City. I don't know. Like, their midfield is class, so I think it's more Melbourne Colazzo. City's midfield. Yeah, Canal. I think Melbourne City's midfield is doing more damage than what their attack is.
Mm. Surprisingly, Jake, Trent Bahaja has 6 votes, which has more than Fornaroli and
and Naboo. It 1 week and we gave him 3 votes each.
Naboo and Castro only have 4 votes each as well.
Yeah, well, like I said, Bahaja killed it 1 week and we both gave him
3 votes and that's it. Whereas Castro and Naboo kill it every week, but we never really look at them. Controversial. Well, we'll move on from this. We'll quickly jump into a little bit of transfer news and A-League news and the likes of that sort of stuff, Jake, when I can find any news to talk about here.
Connor Chapman.
Connor Chapman, yeah. Connor Chapman's gone to the K-League. I can't tell you. It doesn't even say which team he's gone to. He's just gone to the K-League. I don't know if you can find out any information on that, but that's what it says. good move, bad move, don't know. If he's playing every week in K-League, I think it's an alright move. He was not really playing that much for Melbourne City, let's be honest. But I think it's a bad move. I think if he plays, like I said, it could end up being paid dividends for him.
Well, yeah, that's if he plays as well, yeah. So if he plays, then it'll be a very good move for him. In my opinion, but at the same time, he's a weird one because when he's been given the chance by City and stuff, he's always been reasonably consistent in their defence. I feel like if City had been able to hold on to him and have him, and I always forget this bloke's name, the fucking centre back for City. If they had him and Jakobsen as their centre back pairing, they'd probably be a lot better than what they are right now. Nothing against that young lads who are given the chairs this season. But I feel like Chapman's a lot more solid at the moment. But again, I guess he just moves on. Every player wants to move on from the A-League eventually, I guess. And I guess he's thought that right now is the perfect chance for him to do so. So
weird. Mm. I mean, if I was an A-League player, I don't think I'd ever really be tempted by any of the other Asian leagues, if I'm honest. But whatever, they seem to be getting all right money, I guess, from it. So
it's all about the money.
Yeah, it is what it is. Jake, the under-23 Australian team was announced a couple of days ago now. Josip Gombau has obviously taken head of that. The under-23 squad isn't playing any games, I don't think. It's just a 3-day training camp to be held in Central Coast at the end of January. Which is used as preparation for the 2018 Under-23 Asian Cup, which the qualifiers start in July. This 26-man squad is built up of players from just A-League clubs. The second camp, which is held in March, is going to involve overseas players. I don't think it can involve any A-League players then, so I think that's why they've gone all out on the A-League players this one. That's why he wanted the likes of Danny De Silva and stuff in this squad, which we will talk about in a sec. But the squad's pretty strong, I'm not going to lie. You've got first team players in there like Aspro from Western Sydney, Adam Berry from Central Coast, Trent Bahaja's in there, Devante Clort, Garuccio, Izzo, Kamau. They've got a lot of first team players in the A-League. They're playing every week in there, which is good to see. And a lot of young players that haven't really been given too much of a go this season are in and around the squad. Tong Yik's in there from Melbourne City. So they've got a nice a nice squad here that you would expect would probably do pretty well in an under 23 Asian Cup, just based on the A League players alone. Obviously, like I said, you know, Danny De Silva and Stefan Mork and stuff like that will come into the squad, you'd think, for the actual qualifiers, which can only boost their team. But it'd be interesting to see how, well, like how they go in the Asian Cup. Obviously, Josip Gombau, hopefully. I mean, Josip Gombau is obviously a highly reputable coach. He's taken Adelaide to the grand final and won it for him. And he's done very well at most clubs he's been at. He's been at Barcelona, obviously, as a, I think he was in their youth academy at Barcelona as a coach there. So he's got a decent pedigree. It could only be good for a coach of that calibre to be working with the young players of Australia. And, you know, technically speaking, all these players are one step away from the Socceroos squad. So it's good. It's a decent squad. And I don't mind it at all. Jake.
Yeah, it's a very good squad. No, I think it'll give them the taste, like give the young lads a bit of a taste for what it's like to represent your country. Like, obviously, a lot of them would have represented their countries through like younger levels as well, but especially the younger A-League, like younger A-League players too. Like, yeah, I think it'd be a very good experience for them all to represent their country and have a decent crack at something. And like, if they go on and like win the Asian Cup or something like that at that level, and give them all a lot of confidence to go on and do it at a higher level too.
Yeah, exactly.
I think there's not much negative that can come from it. I think it's a very good thing for Australian football.
Ryan Grant and Sebastian Ryle have extended their contracts as Sydney FC. Ryle's been there for a fucking long time. Ryan Grant, he has been rumoured to be on the move to Europe at the end of the season.
He's not bad though.
He's not a bad player.
He's improving. This is his best season by absolute mile in the A-League, but I don't think he's good enough for Europe right now.
No, I think he probably does need another season in the A-League just to sort of, you know, prove that he is good enough to go there. But in saying that, if he does get a move to Europe eventually, good on him. Can only wish him the best of luck. But we'll see what happens. He's obviously been a big part of the Sydney FC side that hasn't lost a game this season. The defence has been impeccable for the most part. So big credit to him. Danny De Silva, like we mentioned about a minute ago, he has left Roda in the Netherlands. Mutual consent, I think. He has been there for the last 18 months on loan, apparently, from Perth. I thought it was a permanent deal. Reason behind this, Roda, I think, are actually last on the table and facing relegation. I think their coach has opted for experience ahead of youth, which does make sense. And De Silva hasn't had a look in, I think, in about 9 games, and they refused to take him on their winter training camp to Portugal. So I think that was enough for him to realise he's not really part of the equation at Roda for at least this season, Jake. So I don't know what the next stage is for him. What I read is he's back in Perth, weighing up his options. It being a loan from Perth, I would have just assumed that it would have been a contract termination from Roda, which means he's free to play for Perth for the rest of the season. According to Dean Philippoussis, who's the CEO of Perth Glory, that's not the case. It's not that simple just to bring him back. But we'll see. I mean, if he says it's not that simple, that obviously means there is a way of doing it. And for Perth to pull Danny De Silva for the second half of the season would be a major coup for them, because he is an exceptional young player, as everyone in the A-League already is aware, and me and you both rate him quite highly.
Tell you what, imagine him, right, just slotting him in the number 10 role at Central Coast.
I think it'd be great.
Like, around the young players they've already got, and probably the position they're lacking most right now, apart from maybe a centre-back, is someone that can sit in the number 10 role and just control the midfield sort of and pass it out to players like Bahagia and Payne.
Yeah, well,
I feel like that would be the perfect fit for him to just go there for the rest of the season, because I don't think it'd be a good fit for him to stay at Perth for the rest of the season, because like they've already got like players like Marinkovic sitting on the bench. So
yeah, there's no real position for him at Perth. But yeah, Central Coast, I'm not sure if we said it. I think it was about 5 weeks ago now, or 4 weeks ago. He was linked with a move to Central Coast because of his links with Paul Okon. I think that'd be a great move for him to have Connor Payne, Trent Bahagia, Adam Berry, and Dana Da Silva all in that sort of midfield four.
Yeah.
Would be perfect. Yeah, it'd be perfect. And Central Coast, they've been known for the development of young players. You've got Matt Ryan, Tom Rogic, Mila Jednak.
David was just on loan to the end of the season, and then he comes back to Perth at the end of the season, and then they move him on to somewhere else in Europe or something. Just so he can get some consistent football under his belt for, like, there's 11 rounds left, so if he went right now, he'd probably play about 9 to 10 weeks. Like, it's not never bad. He'd play 9 to 10 weeks of consistent football.
Then who knows, they could make finals as well. I mean, you can't rule them out. If he comes in and does very well and he's a missing link they need, they could make finals. But, I mean, you don't want to put too much pressure on him, but, I mean, it'd be very good for him. But, yeah, we'll see. Obviously, we'll see what happens. If he can get some game time somewhere, we don't want to see another career stall and regress after such promise in the A-League. But, as it tends to happen with about 9 out of 10 Australians that go abroad these days. But we'll see what happens, Jake. We will quickly kick on with the time we have left to the preview for the upcoming A-League round, where my phone's literally just broken itself. First game of this week, Jake, Melbourne Victory versus Sydney FC in the big blue. I know you don't like it. This game's on Thursday. Now, the most recent game between these two sides was a 2-1 win to Sydney FC, marred by controversy. The goals shouldn't have been goals. It should have been probably a victory win in that game, if I'm not wrong. In saying that, though, the last six home games against Sydney FC, Victory are unbeaten, winning three and drawing three in that time. They kept two clean sheets in the last three of those. So, good times for Victory in Melbourne. Sydney FC haven't won a Thursday fixture on the road since the second season of the competition, where they won 1-0 over New Zealand Knights. So that actually is an interesting stat, that they haven't won a Thursday fixture on the road. Look, this game, in my opinion, is either going to be a very low-scoring game or a very high-scoring game, the two high-scoring teams in the league. So it's going to be pretty interesting, in my opinion, Jake. I actually think that Victory is going to break Sydney FC's hearts and win the game. But we'll see what happens, I guess.
Well, you know, a team that I do not like. Like, usually, if there's a cross-town rival in the league or something like that, like in Europe and everywhere, you probably hate those more than anyone else. But from day one, I've hated Sydney more than anyone. And even if when Hart and Sydney came into the league, I've hated Sydney more. And I'll be very, very, very angry if we do not win this, because I do not like Sydney and I think we are the better team. And I think we should win. I'm not going to give you a result because I literally have no idea what will happen. But I think we are the better team and I think we should be winning this game, because I think Sydney are not as good as what they have been making themselves out to be. Yeah, it'd be a big statement as well to the league, because I don't think Sydney have been good for a few weeks now. And I think, although we've lost our last two on the trot, I think it's just a big chance to prove that we're not out of the title race in the slightest, although I don't really care if we finish first or second because I'd love a Sydney away grand final. But I think we are the better team in this game and we should be winning it. There's no excuses for winning the size.
Newcastle host Melbourne City at Hunter Stadium. City have won 4 of their last 6 games against Newcastle. 2 of those games away at Hunter Stadium, scoring 10 goals and conceding 4 in those 3 last games at Hunter Stadium. However, Newcastle are undefeated in their last 3 home games on a Friday night, keeping 2 clean sheets in that time. For a team that doesn't keep many clean sheets, 2 in their last 3 Friday night home games, they've kept 2 clean sheets, isn't too bad. Melbourne City have not won a game outside of Melbourne since the opening round of the season, conceding in at least a goal in every game, every away game since. So it could be set up here for a Newcastle win if all statistics point to it.
Another blank. Coffs International Stadium.
Yeah, Coffs Harbour. So it'd be interesting. Bruce Kamau, he has provided 6 assists so far this season, which is more than any other player who is yet to score a goal. So that's interesting. He's a bit of a dishmaster player. City are not in the greatest form. They've won 2 and drawn 2 of their last 5. So you can't say it's bad, but I mean, realistically speaking, if you're looking at their performances and the team's adverse and stuff like that, probably a little bit underwhelming. Newcastle, meanwhile, have won 1, drawn 2 of their last 5. They did lose on the weekend, obviously. 2. Sydney FC. No, West Sydney FC. Sorry, my bad. West Sydney Wanderers. I don't fucking know. Newcastle, a young squad. Could be up for it. I don't know. I think it's going to be a draw, personally, but I mean, it'd be nice to see them win.
Yeah, I think it'd be a draw. I was going to lean towards a City win, but you're telling me that they've only won they haven't won out of Melbourne since round 1. I think that's sort of swayed me in favour of thinking that it'll be a draw. I think Newcastle were pretty average, let's be honest, against Western Sydney, but I feel like they will try and amend that. And I don't really think Newcastle are a team that will be worth having so many average performances in a row. So I think they'll try and amend all the mistakes that they made on Sunday against Western Sydney and try and put up a good performance for the Coffs Harbour faithful.
Central Coast Mariners host Perth Glory Jake in a game which I think Central Coast are going to win. The last time these two teams played back in Western Australia earlier in the season, Central Coast managed a 2-0 win, and it was the first time they've kept a clean sheet in a long time, as far as I remember. The home form bodes well for the Central Coast. Since the start of the A-League, the Mariners have won 14 and drawn 3 of their 18 home games against Perth. So just 1 win in 18 for Perth away at Central Coast, which was in November 2014. Mariners have scored 2 goals in each of their last 2 games at home, which is the last time they scored multiple goals in more successive games with a 3-match streak back in 2014. Perth Glory have drawn each of their last 4 games away from home, though, which isn't bad, I guess, considering they've never been touted as a great away side. So it's shaping up to be a good game. I think Perth might struggle. I think Central Coast will have the legs on Saturday, and I think they'll get the win here.
Well, I think it's going to be a draw, Jordan. I think Central Coast are just in that a really weird patch where they're playing decent football, but they're not getting results. On the weekend against City, they weren't good in the slightest, but of course going down to 10 men wouldn't have helped that. And like I've said, I think they're a much better team than last place. So I hope they can get a result, but I don't think they will. I think it'll be a 1-1 draw because Perth are in some decent form at the moment too.
Brisbane Roar host the Western Sydney Wanderers, and the two teams that are enjoying draws this season The last two times, actually, has been a draw, 1-1 draw. But there has been 13 goals scored in total across the last three games between these two sides, which is interesting because if there was 2-1-1 draws, that means the other game, there was 9 goals in that game, which was a 5-4 game, if people are not forgetting that one in the finals, I do believe, of last season, potentially. Brisbane Roar, they have won 4 of their last 6 home games against the Wanderers, losing just 1 of those 6. They haven't been kept scoreless against them since their first encounter against each other back in October 2012. So expect Brisbane to score, most likely, I guess.
You think so?
Yeah. I think this will be another draw, Jake. I think it's going to be another 1-1, to be honest.
I think it will be too. They both love their draws this season. Yeah, I think it's just going to be another one. They're both reasonably good teams, but they've both just not really been able to find the back of the net as much as what they should be when it counts. Brisbane's drawn 6 and Western Sydney's drawn 9, so that's a fair few draws, Julie, when there's only been 16 rounds. Yeah, I don't really know what else to say, really. I think it's going to be a draw. I think both teams will go into the game thinking they can win. And one of them obviously could win. That's the magic of football.
This is the cup.
But I think it will be a draw.
Adelaide United host Wellington Phoenix in the last game of the round on Sunday. Adelaide are undefeated in their last 4 games against Wellington, keeping a clean sheet in every one of those games. Wellington Phoenix, on the other hand, have conceded 14 goals in their last 6 games away from home, only managing to score to acquire 4 competition points in those games. Though Wellington Phoenix have kept 6 clean sheets so far this season, which is the second most of any team in the league. Only one of those 6 has come away from home. All signs for me point for an Adelaide victory. I think they're going to kick on from the somewhat form increase that they've had of late, I mean, considering or comparing it for the rest of their season. As my dog literally goes full retard. I think they'll win, and comfortably, in my opinion. They did get their first win of the season last time Wellington Phoenix visited Cooper Stadium, and I think they'll get another one.
Yeah, I think they will too. I think Wellington have been very good over the last month. But I feel like they'll get a little bit of reality check here. I think Adelaide are going to start trying to build Pine Marsh as a sort of fortress for them again, because it's a very tough place to go for their team. And I feel like Wellington will struggle. I think Adelaide will get like a 2 or 3-0 win.
Yeah, right. what is that? JJ's Football Fix, Bet365 Bet of the Week. I have no idea what it's paying. I haven't even remembered the Bet365 Bet of the Week. Adelaide are paying $2.10 to win at home. Shit, yes, the Bet365 Bet of the Week. Get on it, boys and girls. Central Coast are paying $3.25 to beat Perth at home. $3.60 for the draw. That's not bad. There's a lot. No team this round is paying under $2 except for City to beat Newcastle, and they're not even, in our opinion, going to beat them. So, good week for betting. I don't know. I reckon it's not bad. We'll see what happens. Bet365 Bet of the Week this week is bet on every game, because you'll probably win some money.
Always a chance that you can win some money.
There's a 1 in 3 chance of betting on the result and getting it right. So, we'll see what happens here. that's all for today's episode of the JJ's Football Fix A-League Gal, episode 14. We'll be back on Friday with the Everything EPL podcast, Jake. But until then,
have a nice. I'm on top of the world. Hey, I'm on top of the world.